the pitch. Check swing by Carter. Did he go? Yes, he did. For strike three. Strikeout number 10 for Cade Cavalli. And we're only in the bottom of the fourth inning with two outs.
Back-to-back double-digit strikeout games for Cade Cavalli, who's been quality in 8 straight and in 10 of 11. Pitching like a true ace for the Washington Nationals. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. In 1 hour, we've got tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix here in D.C.
We are exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration, their attorneys, are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
The pitching coach for the Washington Nationals, who's been behind the development and the productivity of Cade Cavalli this season, is Simon Matthews. Hoyas Saxa, a Georgetown Hoyas legend, Danny, Simon Matthews.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to him about a couple of his impressive performances, including in the Cape, that I've heard some good things about. But Simon, thanks for a few minutes here on G&D. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me.
Always a pleasure, buddy. Let's talk Cade Cavalli's just growth here. I mean, he really, truly is starting to look like a number one. When you see a guy on this kind of run, 10 quality starts in 11, the strikeout totals piling up, what is he doing better of late?
I think he's just been really mature all year about sort of biting off one thing at a time and trying to really dominate, you know, the next step in his progression, the next step in his development. For a little while there, that was right. Like, he wasn't getting through bulk innings all the time, every time out, and as our number one, especially early on in the year, like as we were figuring out how things were going to go, right? Like, figuring out how to be a little bit more efficient, get through bulk innings. And then, you know, he started navigating kind of a larger arsenal, right? Figuring out really what is he was going to use each one of his pitches. And of late, recently, it's just been about coming out and making sure that he takes control of the energy of the game. I think a couple weeks ago when we played the Blue Jays at home and Max Scherzer had that outing where, you know, he didn't go deep in the game, but, you know, come hell or high water, he wasn't giving it up to us. There was a way he controlled the energy of that game. I think that was really important for Cade to watch that and how he went about that and figure out, you know, in the context of what it is he does and what it is he does well, how he can be that guy for us.
I'm going to throw Simon on hold, and Darris is going to try to work out whatever's going on with the phone. But I think that's a really good observation,
yeah.
Which is, we've talked about this, the difference sometimes in the stuffy, really talented young arms that can throw the ball past people and the really quality pitcher who's a frontline-type starter is on that day when you don't have your best stuff, being able to figure it out and go hang 6 innings.
Well, even beyond that, what do you do well? And he throws 97 miles an hour. That's what his average fastball is. And yet, his fastball gets hit just when if he tries to throw it by people. That's what I want to ask Simon Matthews about here in a moment, is to figure that part of it out.
Yeah, but he's back, so ask him.
Yeah, so Simon, for someone with that kind of an arm, talking about Cavalli and his average fastball is around 97 miles an hour, obviously that's not the issue, but that fastball gets hit relative to his other offerings, and he's been pinpoint in terms of tunneling and kind of mixing and matching. But I want you to piggyback off your previous answer where you're talking about what he does well. It seems like he's leaning into things that aren't his fastball, and now that fastball's turned more into a weapon here of late. I'd love for you to speak to that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Right, like velocity in today's game is kind of more necessary. It's the beginning of your ticket to the dance than anything else, right? And so he's got that elite velocity, but it's not elite velocity just itself that makes the overpowering fastball. And he's done a lot of really diligent work to improve the movement, especially on his four-seam fastball. He's getting the hang of some grip adjustments he's made over the course of the year with the sinker to be more consistent with that pitch, right? But like, the thing that makes Cade Cavalli special is those two breaking balls and the ability to throw those. And so, you know, if that's going to be what makes him special, that's what he's going to go down fighting with. And I think he's made that conscious decision to use those two pitches really aggressively, to combo them off of each other. And then it's caused the fastball, like you said, to start playing up, along with a lot of the work he's done to continue to improve the quality of that fastball.
Yeah, to that point, just to dive into the numbers a little bit and to get a little deeper into that, it's interesting because his four-seamer, which he throws a lot more to lefties, but especially against lefties, still gets hit at a rate that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I know his expected batting average is like 255 compared to the actual batting average, which is closer to 300. But his stuff, throwing around 97, and maybe it's more a shape of a pitch thing or whatever. Like, I remember in AAA watching him sometimes, and he'd have a start where he strikes out five or six, and you're like, how's that not 9 or 10 with that stuff? And he's starting to do that. But it is odd to me that the fastball has gotten hit by lefties to the extent that it has. What's the difference between days where that's not happening and days where it is?
A lot of times it's just the fine-tuning of command and location, right? If he's going to have a really good day, he's going to get his height right with his fastball. So if he's going down, it's down. If he's going up, it's up. This league can hit velocity right now, man. It's really impressive. Some of the work that even, you know, the 6, 7, 8 hitters in every lineup, 9 hitters in every lineup, like they can all hit a fastball, man. And so if that's going to be the way things are, then Cade, when he's really good with the heater, especially getting his height right, then it can be an overpowering pitch. And then on the days when the height's not quite right, which have been fewer and farther between as of late, then, you know, he's going to be in business a little bit because it adds another thing that he can get guys to miss.
Nats pitching coach Simon Matthews kind enough to join us here on G&D. So, I mean, it's not like I'm taking this for granted, Simon. This has been unbelievable and awesome. It's a treat to watch. But you can't help but wonder for a guy that doesn't have a million big league innings, what's next? Like, is there more growth in the tank for this guy who's just turned into a stud here in the second half especially?
I think so. I think anybody who spent some time around Cade, there's a real seriousness about him just as a man, as a human being, that, you know, reminds me of some of the really great pitchers I've been around, reminds, you know, Sean Doolittle and Bobby Wilson on our staff that have been around some unbelievable arms. Sean was one himself, just like of what it takes to do this year in and year out. I don't want to take for granted just how difficult it is to put together one really good year, let alone 2, 3, 4. But if there's a human being, if there's a man that's capable of deciding to put in that work and then doing it, it's Cade. So I'm going to bet on that guy. And I believe in him, continuing to take steps forward.
Simon Matthews, pitching coach with the Nationals, joining us here on Grant and Danny, talking Cade Cavalli, who's just been unbelievable.
Lights out.
Breaking run value is 97th percentile. Fastball velocity right now in the sport, 83rd percentile, and he's got a great ground ball rate. Strikeout rate's over 80th percentile. If you wouldn't mind, let's talk Will Dion for a second. I'm really intrigued by him because, you know, I look at velocity first a lot of the times, and then I can kind of get into some of the metrics on movement and whatnot, and I'm not an expert like you guys are. But coming over, I'm like, okay, it's okay big league stuff. But then you see his release and like how over the top he is, and there's a funkiness to him that I can't really explain watching him. Now, I'm not expecting him to only give up one hit every 9 innings like he has, 9 strikeouts. Like, he has been, I mean, he's thrown a no-hitter basically for you guys. Mizorowski, but how is he so effective? I mean, he's pretty much like 91 to 93, right?
Yeah, no, he's you're definitely right with the funkiness. And I think he leans into it. It's just a weird angle for a good fastball that's got plus carry to it. He throws that kind of parachute style changeup that not a ton of guys in the league throw. It's kind of a perfect storm of him just being a complete weirdo that that he leans into, and it's been good for us.
I love that. But just getting to that about trying to maximize what everybody does, right? So he's leaning into being, as you said, a weirdo with a parachute changeup, et cetera. In terms of your core philosophies versus what each guy maybe does well, how do you balance that as a pitching coach to kind of make each guy to turn the faders up to maximum on each player?
Yeah, I think there's a reason why everybody's here, right? And so trying to be quick to understand what the sort of baseline reason why everybody's here is, right? So for Will, it's that fastball changeup combo, right? So we need to protect that with our life, right? He's got to be protective of that fastball shape, of his delivery and how he gets to it, and that changeup and his ability to kill velocity on it and execute it to both-sided hitters. And then beyond that, from a developmental standpoint, it's like, okay, what's a little seasoning we can put on this mix to get him to have even more success, right? So if you go to the butcher shop and buy a beautiful cut of meat, you're not going to immediately like chop it up into little pieces, right? You're going to put some seasoning on it and you're going to try and put that beautiful cut of meat into a position to become a beautiful grilled steak, right? So I think that's ultimately what we're after, right? Like, what is it about this guy that makes him special, right? And then how can we add something here, tweak something there, while preserving the things that are sort of innate to him, and have him continue to grow and have more success in the big leagues?
This is my happy place, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when it's all over for me, they're just like, hey, where do you want to go back to? It's not going to be like, you know, in the yard with the kids or something. It's going to be like that time Simon Matthews was comparing steak to like deep dive baseball.
To like pitching repertoire.
Analytics, yeah. I know you're busy and you're not following the minors with like Ben Grable, Joe Glass, Jack Siebert, and Josh Hartle and those guys. But I am curious, actually, now that we're talking about Dion, when these trades happen, do they have you watch tape on any of these guys or like get your opinion on their stuff or anything? Or because you're the big league pitching coach, are you kind of out of that portion of it?
No, absolutely. I think one of the real strengths of this group as we're building it out is some of the relationships that we're able to build just personally between the guys that are, boots on the ground running that day to day and, you know, me as a big league pitching coach, right? So you've got Grayson Crawford, the director of pitching. He and I are super tight. We talk every day. And Devin Pearson and Justin Horowitz, two of our assistant general managers, who are super involved with the trade deadline, as well as obviously Ani and Paul. We're all in constant communication. And those guys, just as much as me, I hope it comes through, like, we all just love ball, man. So when we get a guy like a Joe Glassy is a great example, right? Devin Pearson's texting me like, hey, you got to pull up the video of Joe Glassy's first outing. It was unbelievable, right? And so we're all just like getting excited about doing this together. And you know, as our group grows and as our system improves and as we acquire some of the big pieces of the future, right? Like we're all just, you know, sitting around the conference table prepping for the Rangers, but also getting fired up about the, you know, Ben Grable punching out four in one inning in his first inning in Double-A with us, right? Like it's kind of all the same thing to us, right? Like it's all the same work. It's all stuff that we're constantly talking about, and it's been a blast to do it with these guys.
Yeah, Nats fans may not know because they're in the minors, but that group of arms, Grable, Glassy, Siebert, Hartle, who are some of the top guys you guys bring over at the deadline, 29 and two-thirds innings and just three earnings in the minors so far. And the two future relievers may be in leverage spots, Grable and Glassy, who have crazy minor league numbers. 10 scoreless innings with a .5 whip so far and 13.5 strikeouts per nine. So it's been really exciting. Those are all guys that aren't like in single A. They could impact the team next year. Simon Matthews is with us on Grant and Danny. We were talking about the breakout of Cade Cavalli here. On Brad Lord, he came up as a starter, was an org pitcher the year before you were here, former 18th round pick, kind of came into his own early this season, it felt like, as a multi-inning reliever. And now he's back almost out of necessity, maybe kind of as the bulk guy starting games. Do you think, when we fast forward a couple years, like where is he best?
I don't know if I can answer that necessarily. I think when Blake and I had the conversation about sliding Brad into the rotation, you know, as you said, in some ways out of necessity, Blake put it, I think, in a great way where he's just like, I just think Brad's really good, so I want him to pitch. So if that's in the rotation, I want Brad to pitch in the rotation. If that's bulk out of the pen, I want Brad to pitch bulk out of the pen. I really believe in Brad's stuff. I believe in his ability to compete at this level. So I think ultimately Brad's gonna fall into his best role as our roster evolves over the next couple of years. But you know, he's something, whether it's announcing the starters for a series or calling down to the bullpen, he's somebody we're really excited to put in the game.
Simon, tell me about Jackson Kent. I'm a Jackson Kent guy. It's early, small sample, but it looks like a couple times maybe games, you know, sped up a little bit, lost the zone, more walks than you're kind of used to seeing from him. But I really like the profile. I'm much older than you. I like big 6'3", 220-pound pitchers. Like it would look like a tight end room for me on my staff. I'm a Jackson Kent guy. What have you seen?
He's the real deal, and he's going to be fine. I think a lot of the conversations that he and I have had over the course of the last, you know, week, 10 days is, you know, it's gone fine for stretches up here and it's gone less than fine for short stretches up here. But all the things that are between it going fine and it going really good are things that he's already done really well in his career, right? He controls the strike zone really well. You know, he's not going to be the guy that walks a ton of guys, right? Like he got beat by what, 6 ground ball singles, here a couple days ago in Texas. Right. And so, you know, you clean up a couple things execution wise, and start to learn the league. And I think he's going to be really good, but I'm with you, man. Just not only looking at our staff now, but looking at our group in the minor leagues, I think we're getting close to that tight end room. I joke that we're going to lead the league at getting off the bus.
All get off the bus team, Simon.
It's the biggest pitching staff ever. I mean, we were in the clubhouse. This was even last year before you guys were here. And like some of these dudes, and some of them aren't even around, but like you had to be 6'6" to be in the minor league side of your camp. It was wild how big the staff is. And I know the game's changing to an extent. And that's everywhere. But
like, I want that little tiny fracas. Hopefully no punches, though, no suspensions. But bench is clear. Bullpen comes running in, and you notice our bullpen. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's
absolutely
big. Yeah, that's what I like.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You mentioned...
We joked in Colorado when we got into the little scrum that Eddie Yeam got there the next day, and they were lucky they got it in the day before he got there.
Purposeful.
Well, I was just at a Commanders training camp, and they're down a couple D tackles right now. So if Eddie Jean's got nothing going on, they could probably use him.
He probably needs 2 or 3 weeks to learn the rules, and then he'd be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Stuff-wise, you guys were one of the only bullpens. I saw a stat a few weeks ago, and this no longer qualifies. But there were like 78 relievers this year that were averaging 98 and change out of the bullpen, and you guys didn't have any of them. And now you've added, obviously, a couple guys who do throw really, really hard. You just sent one down who's got to learn to throw some strikes. But I'm wondering about Luis Perales now coming out of the pen the last couple times. He had a 2-inning outing where he struck out 3. And, I mean, it was like just absolutely bite-your-knuckles stuff the other night where he struck out 5 and had a 90% whiff rate on the splitter. Is that a role could see him in this season, do you think? And what do you make of his stuff? Because he's kind of had a... I don't want to say a disappointing season, but I've been a little surprised by some of the numbers this year.
I'm an absolute Luis Perales believer. I think he's a killer. I think the stuff is obviously unbelievable. Jump off the page at you. I mean, you know, I don't pretend to know exactly what we're going to do with him over the course of the next 5-6 weeks. Like, what I can tell you is, like, we're going to make sure we get this one right, because when we get this thing really rolling, Luis Perales is going to be running out of our bullpen to punch tickets. Right. So like, he's, he's on a bit of a heater right now. And, you know, hopefully he can stay consistent with that, because, you know, that stuff's going to work. It's going to work in this league. It's going to work in the next league. You know what I mean? I'd love to see him up here at some point. I don't pretend to know exactly how that's going to play out, but I'll tell you right now, that kid's going to be punching tickets for the Nationals and the big leagues for a while in the future.
Yeah, I can't wait. We saw him in spring training. It was actually funny. So Paul was sitting in the booth with us doing an interview with us, and it was the first time he pitched. It was like March 3rd or something like that in a spring game, and we had just gotten to West Palm. And Paul was like moving around and like nervous like a dad. And I'm like, are you?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, do you watch every game like this? He's like, no, but I told him not to throw it this hard. He was like, he was literally
he was rocking
102.
He was going full Leo Mazzoni on it, dude. He was so upset.
It was like March 3rd. And I was like, oh my, like Paul's not going to make it 162 games. He's like, this is not normal. Like, this is my first, he had just traded for this guy, you know, but it was,
right.
It was hilarious to watch that.
No, that's Paul to a T too. If he's got a guy he's particularly fixated on, he is going to watch every bat of his eyelashes and track every step he takes around the mound. And then he's going to have thoughts after, and those thoughts are going to be right. It's been awesome to work with him.
That's cool. So Danny, before we let Simon Matthews go, see, you sleep a little bit on when he was actually pitching. So how about an 8 shutout inning performance at the Cape against the lineup that had Cal Raleigh, Ernie Clement, Jonathan India? I think you were you on the same team or pitching against Tom Cosgrove for that game?
I was on the same team as Tom Cosgrove, yeah. The Chatham A's.
Chatham.
Back in my glory days. That's the last day I was any good.
I mean, that one, has Cosgrove heard about that?
I'd hang my hat.
I'll bet he probably has brought it up to you even. I mean, that's pretty nasty.
When he got here, I was joking around that he's one of the only people who might actually remember that I used to be any good.
Well, you know what's such a bummer is you never got to play on the on-field campus at Georgetown, where you'd hit a ball 500 feet and you had to go another 15 feet to that little mini graveyard where Mo Vaughn hit his.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. That's they've done a beautiful job with that campus, but I every time I used to walk past the business school, I would think about it used to be in a ball field and, you know, be a little bit bummed out.
It's a great parking lot now for the hospital. I mean, it really is a good parking lot.
There you go.
What's your level of Knicks fandom? Charlie Slows told me, like, during the playoffs, you were ride or die with the Knicks.
Yeah, I grew up a gigantic Knicks fan, through, you know, those, like, late 90s, early 2000s teams with Latrell Sprewell and Allen Houston. My dad and I used to go to a couple games a year when Eddie Curry was, like, the quickest dunker of all time. And Isaiah Thomas was running the show. And as I've gotten into this job, it's really hard for me to end the day getting my heart broken by a loss that's not a Nationals loss or make my day with a win that's not a Nationals win, right? I already end the day 162 times a year, like either as a winner or a loser. So in the off season, I kind of need to take a deep breath, but the Knicks run was unbelievable. They hauled me all the way back in, and Charlie and I were sitting at the bar in Cleveland when they clinched, because we were playing the Guardians. We watched them clinched, and I just sat there kind of soaking it up. It was a blast. It was a really fun run.
That's awesome.
That must be really cool to have your team win a championship. That is something we all want to have again. Simon, appreciate
That's
you, buddy.
Exactly right.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, man. Keep up the great work.
Yeah. Thanks. Take care, guys.
Yeah, congrats on the strong season. There's Simon Matthews, Nationals pitching coach, on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. They got them one in Cade Cavalli. He is an absolute stud, and he's just starting to scratch the
Getting
surface.
Better as the season progresses. This is wear down time, by the way. This is career high in innings. This is I'm exhausted or my arm is a little bit dead. He's getting stronger as he goes. He's a horse.
Let's go around the NFL next. Some news and notes from the day that was in training camps all over the country on The Fan. Olsen, top 5 hipster jerseys for Commanders fans to get coming out of training camp. I tried to take longevity into account. Do I think this guy's going to be around for an extended period of time or not? The entire list doesn't reflect that. So I went Joshua Joseph's number one. Again, it's a hipster.
This is hipster Paulson, yeah.
Jersey list. He's a draft pick. He's just getting started.
So he's got a couple years because they don't like to cut their own draft picks.
I think he's immensely underrated. I think this is a guy that's going to actually play a lot and play well this year. And I think he's only going to get more and more popular as the year goes on. But a 48 Josephs would look pretty good. I had a 48 jersey before. What was it?
Steven Davis?
Wrong. I'm looking for Toby knows it because Toby had the same jersey, I'm pretty sure.
That'd be Chris Horton.
That would be the Predator.
Oh, that's right.
Chris what, Horton.
Didn't Davis wear 48?
He did.
Okay.
I never had it. You know why? Because that's a running
too
back.
Popular. Too
Everybody
popular.
Everybody has
I get
a Steven
that.
Davis.
Yeah, yeah, I got that.
Number two on my list behind Joshua Josephs in the hipster Paulson out of training camp jersey rankings.
Okay.
Jeremy Reeves. I think a 39 All-Pro Revo looks good. That's a special teams ace who's now elevated to starting safety. Best friends with the people's punter, Tress Way. What's not to like about Revo?
That's your story.
Undrafted free agent, self-made, has gone from not on the team to on the practice squad to now a special teamer to a special teams All-Pro to getting to play on defense to like the slowest eight-year ascension ever to starter in the National Football
League. I mean, a snail's pace.
Pretty amazing.
I'm trying to remember another 39. It's again, I'm terrible at this, as you know. Did anybody else do that?
39 for the Commanders. Nothing is coming to mind right now.
Someone with the last name Stevens wore 39, like some marginal fullback, like a Leonard Stevens or some kind of nonsense?
He wore 45, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah.
What did TJ Duckett wear?
He wore 35.
It looked really big on his back.
David Amerson.
Ooh, good one.
Oh.
Former second-round pick.
Yeah.
He was not a good player.
Now, not at football. No.
51st overall pick, I think, actually.
Yeah, never forget. By the way, second-round picks in Washington, not friends.
Haven't been for a long time. That's a lot of regimes.
That cuts across a whole mess of regimes.
Another safety wore 39 for the Redskins. Dante Whitner.
Wasn't here long enough for me to remember that.
I don't think that's the right name.
Hitner.
Isn't his last name Hitner?
Yes, you're right.
Thank you.
You're right.
Everyone got that bit right away.
Second round pick. I mean, we could go back and forth for an entire segment, but Jarvis Jenkins. I mean, you could Malcolm Kelly, Devin Thomas.
Oh, man.
It just goes and goes and goes. Recently. I don't want to get in all of them over the last couple of years, but there's plenty of those, too.
Yep.
Number three on my list. These are hipster Paulson, jersey hipster options for you. I got Josephs ranked first. I got Reeves ranked second. I particularly really like this one. This is Colson Yankoff's music. This is an 80, and it says Yankoff on the back of the jersey. That's kind of fun, right?
We're all having a great time. This one is your I've dubbed it the Grant Paulson Cole Turner Award.
Yeah.
The athletic tight end that can catch where you now if Yankoff goes this entire year without catching a pass or like is inactive most Sundays, I don't expect that by the way. I like him a lot too.
If he's healthy and he doesn't catch a pass, I'll sign the deed of my house to you.
Right. And again, I'm not saying it would. But he would be the guy that you'd bring up long into the future about someone that, you know, stands out and you can't quit it and just why don't they do it? Because the love affair you have with Cole Turner, that was like your high school girlfriend. This is like love of your life type stuff with Colson Yankoff.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to pretend like I didn't like Cole Turner. The difference between how I felt about Cole Turner and how I feel about Colson Yankoff is like I'll eat the apple versus the steakhouse is 2 hours away. Let's get in the car. Like, it's a very, very different thing. Like, oh, you've got an apple?
You're sleeping on how much you talked about and loved Cole Turner.
I liked Cole Turner. Absolutely.
But it's the way you were in your life. You weren't ready to marry somebody. You're ready to marry Cole Turner. I almost said Cole Turner. You're ready to marry Yankoff.
Oh, totally.
That's where you are.
Yeah, love Yankoff, for sure. Number four, jersey hipster Paulson.
Mm-hmm.
This one is based on the longevity factor, okay? And we're borderline on the fringe, on the cusp of this not being hipster enough. Jalen Lane. Lane, who is down the depth chart, sixth-ish wide receiver probably, but your starting punt returner, I'm very confident he'll make the team.
Okay.
And he's only in year two, so he's going to be here for several years. So I think in the way that Josephs is a lock, Reeves probably has a couple seasons left with the team. Yankoff's just getting started. Jalen Lane's going to be here. He's your punt returner. Two major tutties last year on special teams. I love the way he's played the last week or so dating back to the preseason game. I think he deserves to be on the roster. But a less hipster than I would prefer to be, especially with the Virginia Tech fandom.
Ah, I was going to say that's how it becomes unhipster. Just Hokies following Hokies.
But there's too many Hokies fans around at practice that are like, Jalen Lane, it's third down.
What down is it?
And I don't know why they sound like most Hokie fans don't sound like that.
Well, the guys that I knew sounded like that. Yeah. Coming out of the barn with their overalls on, smelling like Skull Mint, calling me all sorts of names under the sun.
And fifth and finally, Tyler Owens. Now, this is a hipster Paulson jersey. Like, I don't wear gear anymore. I don't. I can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't have it. Can't coach with them.
Can't go to press box with them.
I actually told Allie, works for the team, the other day, she was wearing this black hat that said Hail in white letters in like a weird font.
Uh-huh.
It's the coolest hat I've seen for the team in a long, long time. I don't want something really loud. I don't want anything that says Commanders ever.
Right,
I don't want anything that's like big with like, and I don't just mean Commanders.
What about
I mean,
those oversized hats that you guys thought were so funny for a minute?
Those are fine. I like those.
That's fine.
No, I'm being told that I don't need one of those.
Ah.
But like I want understated. Like my favorite Nats hat is that the one I have where it's like a small square and it has like the logo. I don't want the block W really.
Right.
So she had this thing that just said Hail. And you could kind of get it. You're on the golf course or something. Unless you actually know anything about the Commanders, you have no idea what that is. It just looks like a word. And I was like, I dig that hat. Why am I telling you this? Oh, because I don't buy gear, but I would wear that
hat. But you would wear that.
And I'm saying I don't buy gear, but if I hypothetically had to get a Commanders jersey right now, I would either get a Jeremy Reeves. That would be probably one of my early first choices.
Sure.
Colson Yankoff, Tyler Owens, or Drew Stevens, because I'm kicking Paulson.
How does somebody get in there? I understand if you're too good, you're ineligible right away. Like, there's no McLaurin, there's no Jaden Daniels. Obviously, that's a given. No, you're not going to wear Diggs. That's a new fad.
Yeah.
But, like, how could Matt Golbin get in there?
I've never been an O-line jersey guy.
Okay.
Which is weird as a fat, because you would think you'd want two numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Like a four, like a Frankie Louvu single digit is tough, right? Stretches across. I should be an O-line guy. I've said this before. I should wear a Sam Cosmi, like a 76. But I've never really been an O-line jersey guy. Never owned one, never had one.
Okay, so the O-line corollary is interesting. But if let's say it weren't,
yeah.
What's more hipster than being in on Josh Connerly right now? See what I'm saying? Like the PFF's got him dead last. He's got a 50-some grade.
Just, well, if you're drafted in the first round, you're out.
Then you're out.
I thought I had something there. I could do a list of things that eliminate you.
This is what I'm looking for.
And we could find the perfect hipster jersey. Like, you know what jersey I would be steamed to buy tonight if I was a guy that did this?
Mm-hmm.
Kane Medrano. Now, he may get cut in today, tomorrow, or in a week. I think he's not going to. I think
that 5'6 Medrano.
He's going to make a team. But like a 56 Medrano, I'm going to walk into the bar and there's going to be one ball knower that comes up to me like, bro, is that a Kane Medrano? And I'm like, it is. Like, are you his brother? Like, nah.
No.
Just a guy. Man.
I just appreciate.
I'm just a boy. He's going to be like, damn.
Yeah.
Can I get you a drink? I'm like, yeah, you can.
How many? yeah, you can. How many games does someone need to be up off the practice squad? In other words,
you don't have to be. I'm fine with practice squad jersey. You don't think I want a Jaden Bradley 86?
This is where I was going.
Yeah, like, you can do
what about Bradley 86?
Definitely, you could do that. I think you lose some points for that because there is a threshold of like you're trying a little bit too hard if you're not on the active roster.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. What if he is? Now he's up for four games.
Perfect. That's even better. Yeah. You could do practice squad. I think that what you're looking for, ideally, the perfect hipster jersey, 53 man.
Yep.
Plays a little bit. A lot of people don't know his
Nobody
first
else
name.
Has.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If people have to go, is that guy on the team? I'm like, Ale Kaho, 51? Yeah. Were you watching the Dolphins preseason game when he picked off a pass? You forgot that already?
And he wears the extra helmet.
That's why I can't do Ale Kaho.
I see.
One of my other rules is this. I probably get in trouble for this somehow, but remember, I have young children and I just want to keep feeding them. If you wear a Guardian cap, I can't get your jersey. And I'm happy that you're happy. Like, I want you to not have any brain issues.
Totally, yeah.
I agree with the science.
Mm-hmm.
Also, can't get your jersey if you wear a Guardian cap. Because it is just...
Because it's your purchase.
It's my purchase.
Right.
This is about me.
Right.
It's a horrible look. Like, I don't mean like vibes-wise.
Aesthetically.
Aesthetically?
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Not for me. So, Romeo Doubs, any receiver ever for the Packers the last 3 years. out.
More of an affront to Team Paulson. Longer hair coming out of the helmet or Guardian cap?
Even.
The same?
The same, yeah.
Syndergaard equals Kaho.
Well, no, I like Kaho a lot. He doesn't do it in games. Very important caveat.
Oh.
This is in games.
Oh, I see.
In practices, we're going to have a conversation about it. But, again, you do you.
Yeah.
You got a family, whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Games is when it's, I can't wear the jersey.
I see.
Yeah. We're going to do it in practices, fine.
I think we got to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
I like this.
Exactly.
I learned a lot this segment, I feel
Indeed.
Like.
Grant and Danny on the fan. We didn't go around the NFL. We will still do that at some point. Our double play is next. Just over 10 minutes from now, we're giving away tickets, a two-pack, to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix. You got to be listening to Grant and Danny. That's at 4 ahead of the Beltway Blitz. It is time for our double play. Danny, do they make youth baseball bats that aren't torpedo bats anymore? Why does every kid on my kids' teams
that's a fad,
all
yeah.
have, I don't even know if they call them torpedo bats, but that's like the shape of them, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? My wife just bought my kid a bat. He was all fired up. He showed it to me today. I wasn't involved in the purchase. But it's not a bat. It's like a torpedo bat. It's got the very skinny bottom and then the big end and barrel. And I feel like for a young person, it's not the right bat to have because you're going to miss hit all the time and whatever else. But every kid last year, as the season went on, that got a nice new bat would get that torpedo-shaped metal youth baseball bat.
Yeah, not everyone. Like the cheap ones, like we got one. I just pulled this up. Like a 25-16 or something like that. Just, you know, a very nothing burger, very little barrel, nothing to it bat. So they still have some for like $8, but anything that's what's in vogue right now is the torpedo. And it should be. I screamed about this as a kid, and of course everyone told me to shut up and you know go hustle somewhere. But where you are trying to hit the ball isn't as big a surface area as the end of the bat. That never made sense to me. I'm trying to hit the ball in the sweet spot. Why wouldn't you try to make the sweet spot the point of emphasis so that when you did hit it there, it did more damage? So to me, it's always been intuitive.
Jason Wirth, I feel like, came on with us and claimed that it sounds like I'm taking a shot. I'm not. But he talked about like inventing the idea of the torpedo bat, kind of. You mentioned that you invented the idea of the torpedo bat.
I didn't invent anything.
There's another guy that actually invented the torpedo. I feel like that's one of those things that everyone says, they said, why don't we have this kind of bat?
So he had two ideas. He's like, yeah, Icon Racing. And that was the first one. And the second one was the torpedo bat.
You love getting an Icon
Racing. I shoehorn it every time.
I mean, he's a horse race guy with a company. Icon Racing.
Do you know what the company is?
It's Icon Racing.
Icon Racing, yeah.
It's time for Danny's double play. There it is.
Humiliating. This is humiliating. So last night, yesterday on the radio program, Grant was out at Ashburn at the park, and I was here, right? No problem. Recorded an interview with Stingray Rob, yes, that's real, and Kurt Busch here in studio that we're going to play later because the big IndyCar races this weekend. It's actually been kind of cool getting to talk to a couple of these drivers here in person. It's not something I normally would do or care about, but this is here and it's happening. It's pretty neat.
I texted you driving home listening to the interview because pull back the curtain. You recorded it before the show.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, I'm not here. I'm out at training camp. I would have loved to have met Kurt Busch. NASCAR Paulson would have been fired up by that. He was in studio. I didn't even realize he was in studio, so that was a bummer. But he did a good job. That was fun to listen to.
Thank you. I think it's pretty cool. So because of that, we were going to play that in the 6 o'clock hour that the show is done normally at 6:30 or close to it. We were done at 6, which really means we're done at 5:53 and, you know, 50 seconds, right? So I'm out of here. I didn't have enough time to go home, be able to pick up my older sons who both happen to have soccer practice at the exact same time, okay, at a field that's about 20 minutes away. So I wouldn't be able to make it in time, but I can still get there, see their whole practice, take them home, et cetera. So our buddy filled in and we did a carpool thing. No problem. Awesome. Got to appreciate everybody. So I've got enough time. I'm not going to be home until 8 something. And I'm out of there out of here a little before 6. So I texted my wife. I'm going to grab something to eat. Don't worry about me for dinner. One less thing for you to worry about. You know, fed the kids, et cetera. So I, on my way to a place that's not too far from the field. And I go, oh, here's where I'll go. Dave's Hot Chicken. I haven't had hot chicken in a minute. I worked out, feeling good about myself, but whatever. I'll undo all the good work. I'll go to Dave's Hot Chicken. Well, for whatever reason, right next door, there was a cheesesteak place. And I was like, you know what? I've had so much cheesesteak content in my algorithm of late. I'd like over cheesesteaking. I had Celebrity Deli's cheesesteak last week, and I loved it. I was like, let me get this cheesesteak. And it was just fine. It was probably a C cheesesteak, and I regretted it as soon as I had it. So I'm in the restaurant eating my cheesesteak with fries and like my Arnold Palmer. And a dude comes in there, sits down, that was a little bit too smelly and crazy and made me uncomfortable in a way. Like, you know, in case something happens, I'll leave. I'm going to go to practice anyway. I don't want to be here anymore. Right? Because he sat down real close to me in a place that wasn't that crowded, if that makes sense. Making a lot of noises. He had a popsicle for some reason that he didn't get there. There was like six bags. I was like, I don't want.
We've all been there where the person that you're uncomfortable by is getting pretty close and you're like, this person's not a normal person.
Right. And it's, again, I'm sure everything was fine, but it's like, why am I going to do it? I'm going somewhere else anyway. So long and short is I've got 3/4 of my cheesesteak, all the fries and the beverage. And I get to the parking lot of where the soccer practice is at this high school, and I'm going to eat in my car. And for some reason, as I'm sitting there eating in the car with it parked, I realize, like, this is gross. And I feel shame while I'm doing this. I don't know why. I was eating this at a restaurant 2 minutes ago, but it felt shameful for some reason. And in that moment, I swear to you, as I felt shame, here come my oldest son, my 8-year-old, his buddy, and another one of the kids are in this carpool. Having seen me pull up, I didn't realize they'd seen me, and they're putting their hands on the window as I'm hunched over, you know, trying not to spill the cheesesteak, but like slurping into my mouth, like Gollum holding the ring, like looking up at them, like snarfing, and so gross.
It's like you're sneaking a cheesesteak.
Like I'm literally, like I'm cheating on somebody. Like I'm doing drugs in the car, and their like hands and face are plastered in the window. Like, ew, what are you doing? Like that's not on your diet. Like yelling at me. And other people gathered around to see what was going on because all the kids are arriving for practice. And it's like, what's going on? My dad's in there eating a cheesesteak. And it was humiliating. It was the talk of practice before they started. They're telling the coach about it. Other parents were aware of teams that were not even on because it's like all the different age groups are practicing together and they're doing different stuff. And it's like, yep, there's sweaty cheesesteak car guy just all disheveled with like lettuce and a little bit of mayo in the corner of my mouth. It was humiliating and awful. Like, it would have been better off if they'd seen me, like you ever see those videos or someone, like, catches someone in an airport, like, on their phone, like, loudly watching adult films?
Right.
It was, like, that level of embarrassment that I was scarfing down a cheesesteak and fries that was a C-minus at best.
I think that's the best thing about it is the unnecessary and for no reason shame that you had.
It was so much shame.
Pretty normal thing for people to, like, eat in their car while they wait for their kids or something. But it's almost like you're
caught.
Sneaking it.
I got caught. And I didn't. I'm an adult. I'm almost 47. Didn't break any rules. Yet somehow it was so embarrassing.
That's funny. G&D on the Fin. That's our double play. It is sponsored by FH Fur. For 45 years, FH Fur has set the standard for premium comfort. To celebrate, get 0% financing for 72 months on a qualifying new system purchase, plus a premium EnviroWare IAQ 5-inch filter absolutely free. FH Fur plumbing, heating, AC, electrical, absolutely the best. We're giving away those tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix as soon as we come back on the Fan.